Velkommen til ny episode av Namaste. Mange av oss vil nok I løpet av livet oppleve at drømmer går I oppfyllelse, for så å knuses I tusen knas. Det opplevde jeg for mange år tilbake da jeg fikk drømmejobben min, som ett år senere viser å aldri bli noe av. Skuffelsen sitter nok I meg fremdeles, men jeg husker at den dagen den vonde beskjeden kom, så bestemte jeg meg for å fokusere på yogaen og på praksisen min. Gå på matta hver dag. Jobbe meg gjennom det vonde og komme ut av situasjonen sterkere og bedre rustet for kommende nedturer. Og av og til så kan en sånn vending også bli en slags blessing. Det noe annet vi skal møte, noe vi skal lære og noe annet vi skal oppleve. I alle fall hvis vi velger å se sånn på det. Dagens gjest var prima ballerina. Francesca Golfetto kom fra Italia til Norge for å danse I nasjonalballetten og leve ut den store drømmen på den norske opera. Men sånn skulle det visst ikke bli. En skade gjorde til at drømmen brast. Så kom yoga inn I livet. I dag underviser hun fulltid og inspirerer over 115 000 følgere på Instagram. Jeg har alltid vært så nysgjerrig på Francesca sin historie, hvordan hun taklet at den store drømmen brast, og hvordan hun klarte å finne en ny karriere der hun får brukt kroppen og estetikken I seg selv. Endelig har jeg fått henne I studio, og jeg gleder meg skikkelig til å dypdykke inn I hennes historie. Vi kommer til å gjøre intervjuet på engelsk, bare sånn at dere vet det. Hun forstår norsk, men foretrekker engelsk, så welcome, Francesca!
Hei, Vibeke!
It's so nice to have you.
I feel very honored to be here and happy.
And I haven't seen you for such a long time.
No, it's been forever.
I don't know if we should blame COVID or yeah. I don't know, but...
Probably COVID and kids and, you know, life.
Exactly.
Yes.
We first met, I don't really remember the first time I met you, but I remember seeing you and... At that time, I was working in Run Relax.
Yes.
And we were doing a shoot.
Yes.
And I was like, I need to have this girl.
Yeah, and that shoot was so much fun.
It was such a great day. And yes. I think, you know, we did like, through my years in Run Relax, we did like a lot of shoots. Yeah. But those photos are amazing.
They are amazing.
So that
we
was really
nice. We had lots of fun. I was also very happy to be there then.
Yeah. But how is life now?
Well, quite different than it was before. I got two kids in the past, you know, 4.5 years. So, but it's great. Yeah, it's intense right now, but I'm very happy.
That's good. Yeah. So let's go back to your childhood. I remember when you told me this story. Many years ago when we first met, it made such a big impression on me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wish I had a camera here now so they could see your smiling, beautiful face because you have such an energy that just goes into your soul. So, it really made like a impression on me and I've always thought like, I need to get your story.
That's so nice to hear. Thank you.
But let's go back to your childhood in Italy.
Yes. So it was, you know, I loved it in a way, but it was hard. I started, you know, whatever my sister was doing, I wanted to do as well. So my dream was actually never to be a ballet dancer. I did gymnastics when I was 4.5, 5. And first was just a play. And then, like everything else I do in life, I go 100%. So very soon I ended up in competitions. And the competitions went well. So it was another one. Until I got offered to get into the national team. I think I was 8 or 9. And to do that, they asked me to go and do school there. And I would have gone right away, but my mom and dad said, no way. So I anyways did normal school and then I went there for lunch and then trained all afternoon. But that, you know, something switched, I think, with the teachers. They got a bit upset maybe. And, you know, at that point, I never had a weekend off. I never went to birthday parties or sleepovers or anything, but it was fine for me. I think I was just dedicated. But there was one day I was training and I was jumping from one place to another. And I face planted myself on the floor and my teacher came and she slapped me because wow. I felt, yeah. And my mom saw that because she picked me up a bit earlier and she said, you're never going to come in this place again. So I was desperate at that point. And then she took me and she said, you're going to go and do ballet class. And that's because I was very, it was gymnastics, acrobatics that I was doing. So I was very masculine, if you can say that. You know, I was fighting all my boyfriends at school, lifting, like I was so strong and not very feminine in a way. So I said everything but ballet. So I actually cried the first time that she took me to ballet class. Then I tried ballet. I was like, okay, that's not bad. And my teacher came out at the studio with me and in front of me said to my mom, she doesn't have anything to become a ballerina. So at that point, I was so competitive that when I heard that, I was like, that's it. I'm in. I'll show you. So that's how it started. Maybe not in the best way, but that's how it started.
And then how old were you then?
I think I was 10, 11. So quite okay. late in that sense. But, you know, then it started and I got told that my feet were bad, you know, so but I had the strength. So right away she put me on point shoes to get a bit more of an arch. You know, she was checking if inside the shoes, if you don't know what point shoes are, the one very hard, the one people you see in. She was checking that nothing was inside because I had to create the hard skin. So I was bleeding everywhere. I mean, it was, let's say I went from one thing that was hard in a way to another. But, you know, then that went very fast again. And actually, the year after, I went for an audition at La Scala, that's in Milan. And I got in and I was going to go right away. But then we had a family, like a person very, very close to me that lived in Milan that died, actually. So after I was there for a month, I was like, no, I want to go home because it was too hard for me to be there without him. Mm. So I was still in Padova. That's where I'm from, in Italy. And I went back to Milan when I was 13, alone.
To live there?
Yes. So I moved wow. away when I was 13 to study. Because in a way, at some point, if that's what you want to do, Padova didn't give me enough, you know. So I had to go and study somewhere else.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
But where did you live? I mean,
I rented a room from a person that, it was, it ended up being not a very nice person. So I was there for 1 year. And then the second year I did every day Padova, Milano, which is 2 hours plus on the train.
Wow.
So I took my studies alone. So I did private studying and I commuted every day.
Wow, it's really hardcore. And
it
so
was very
young.
Hardcore. Yes. So the first year at school, I did because I was doing ballet in the morning, and then I did an evening high school, And I was the only one of my age. So everyone else was like 70, 40, you know, the people that want to take a degree later on in life. And then it was me. So it was a bit, it was funny. You know, you learn from everything, but it was kind of a crazy experience when I think about it now.
But you were so determined.
Yes.
Did you then realize that you wanted to be like a professional ballerina?
Yes, totally. I remember my mom, when the opportunity came again, looked at me in the eye and she said, "Do you want to do this?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, I'll support you then."
Wow. So what happened?
So I was in Milan for 2 years and they actually moved me up with, you know, the ballet thing. So at 15, I had a degree. I was done with school. And then I was like, okay, what now? And then I was actually supposed to go to Paris, to the Paris Opera Ballet School. And then the director changed that year. And even though I did a million auditions to get in, I got a letter home saying that the new director had problem with foreign people. So I wasn't allowed in the school anymore. So that was a total heartbreak.
Wow.
One of many. So then I was like, okay, I need to find another school. So looking around in Europe, I ended up going to the Royal Ballet School in London. I was 15 then. And, you know, again, I was so focused that I just saw, you know, what I wanted to do. I didn't think about, okay, actually leaving my country, going to a country that I didn't know the language, because I don't know if you know, but Italians don't speak English. So,
well,
you know,
My
mom took me there. And I still remember that feeling when she left me. At that point was a college that I lived. I was sleeping in a triple room. One girl was Australian and the other one was Japanese. And usually it's a lot of foreign people at the Royal Ballet School, but my year was mostly British. So it was only actually three of us coming from abroad or from somewhere else. So it felt like breaking in a family in a way, you know, because they were all very attached from the lower, because in London there is two schools. There is a White Lodge, which is the smaller kids, and then it's upper school, which is the bigger kids. That was us. But to be in London alone was terrifying.
Wow.
It was so scary.
I can imagine.
And that's because I didn't understand. I couldn't speak. People didn't understand me, even if I tried. So that was, it was another step in a way. But I was there for 3 years. I learned a lot. It was very, very, very hard. I got injured for the first time, a couple of times. And that's because, I mean, we were training or dancing for over 8 hours a day. You know, it was a total new level of training. The last year I got to dance a lot with Royal Ballet Company. So I was at school all day and then in the evening you'd perform with the company. So you literally, you were going all day long. But it was, you know, an experience that really changed me, I think. I don't know if all for the best. But it was, it's part of me, I guess, now.
And when did you come to Norway? Was that after London?
No. Or? So after London, I was actually going to go back to Milan. And then I was in Milan for a week. And I was like, okay, this is going to be a disaster. So then I went to Zurich.
Oh, okay.
So I was in Zurich for 2 years. I loved the city, you know, it was great. And I had lots of friends actually from London in Zurich, lots of a very young company, very hungry company in a way. It was like, you know, we danced a lot. But the director at that point, he had women in the company because he had to, but he hated all the women in the company.
Wow.
Yeah. So... And he was a choreographer, so we danced a lot of his stuff, which was fine. But after a while, you feel like, okay, you're always dancing. Not the same thing, but, you know, a bit. So it was quite clear for me that 2 years was enough. Mm. Then, you know, Norway came in my mind. The opera house, the new opera house was just built. Mm. And they danced exactly what I wanted to dance. So they had a repertoire of all the classical that I loved and the very, very beautiful contemporary dance that I loved also. So all the choreographer that I really wanted to be able to dance. So, yeah, you know, and I never thought in my life I would consider Norway as a country to live, but that was more because I don't like cold and I don't like snow. But again, you know, I was like, okay, career.
So how does it happen? Do you apply? Yeah.
So many times, you know, sometimes if you're in a company, a choreographer comes or a director comes, they see you, they ask you. Mm. But in this case, I applied. Mm. I applied, I auditioned. And you know, you always need to do more auditions because they never say yes right away because they all need to see the old people that want to join the company. But I got a very positive feedback then. That was early September, the year before kind of joining. But, you know, I kept looking around and then finally I got a yes. So I was like, okay, it's going to be Norway. You know, I remember when I auditioned, I actually brought my mom because I was like, okay, we're never going to go to Norway again. So let's just come with me. And I remember I saw the opera. At that point, it was still from, you know, the central station with the bridge. So you came out of the bridge and then you saw the opera. I said, oh my God, if I get to dance here, I'll be the happiest person ever. Mm. And I was, you know, it was absolutely amazing. The theater, it's incredible. The company was very friendly, very open, a lot more relaxed than I experienced before. Mm. Yeah, but you know, it's being a ballet dancer is not a joke. It's not easy.
No, I think I have heard before, but now I really realize what hard work and hard life.
Yes.
It's like it's... That's the only thing you do, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived in the theater, you know. And it's also, you know, I always compare, for example, professional athletes, like if you think skiers or tennis player, you know, they have a huge team of people working for them, figuring out everything they need, you know, from nutrition, training, mental performance, everything. Mm. And ballet dancer, they are athletes and they get zero help.
Yeah. You're kind of on your own.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
You get told you need to be skinny, you know, but not too skinny. And, you know, they don't tell you how to do that. Mm. You know, you have zero mental help and it's a very, very straining job, you know, to perform in front of thousands of people.
And is it also very competitive? I mean, inside a company? Because,
crazy.
You know, everybody wants to have the lead role. Everybody
exactly.
wants to be the swan.
Yeah, exactly that.
I would think.
Especially that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, when I watched Black Swan the first time, I said, okay, this is insane. And then I watched it again. I was like, this is exactly it. Mm. In a Hollywood version, but this is exactly it. Mm. So, you know, you have, say, women, more than half of the company usually. And no one becomes a ballerina, at least I think, to be average, to be corps de ballet. Mm. You know, we're all there with one dream and that's to be the one. Mm. So, you know, you get all kind of, I think people try to reach that point with different ways. Like for me, I feel like this happened a bit in London. I felt like my character changed completely because, I mean, you probably see that, but I'm a very happy, smiley, I would say nice person. But the more you show yourself as soft, if you show that you cry, people will run over you. And that's it.
Yeah.
So I felt like I built a shell around me, but I had, you know, people that it was full mobbing in a way. You know, they, you do all kind of things. Mm. But yeah, competition is hard.
Yeah.
Competition, it's...
So, but what kind of ballets did you do? I mean...
Oh, what did what, I what's on not your repertoire? Do? I think, you know, I was super lucky to dance. Mm. I think most of the classical ballet and I must say contemporary ballets that I love. Like I, you know, when I look back, I feel so lucky to have danced so much. Mm. But I think, you know, that also made it a bit harder because I was, I think, 26 when I got injured.
Mm. What happened?
So I'm going to go to the physical part first. Mm. My ankle. I had pain for over 3 months. And, you know, I danced with broken toes before and with all kind of injuries, but you know, you just keep on going because I wanted to and I felt like I had to. So this time I felt it was a different pain, but I had so much going on and I felt like I couldn't let people down, and I was kind of told you have to dance. And I did my last performance, that was Giselle, I still remember. Mm. And I left the stage puking because I had so much pain, and with full tears, you know, I couldn't move, basically. Mm. And then at that point, I got told that if I was like that, it was better for me and for them if I didn't perform. I was like, well, I kind of told you so. So at that point, my physiotherapist said, now you're off for a week. And I thought it was going to be a week, but after a week... I couldn't still walk. Mm. So we started to do some tests. And well, I had broken malleolus and then a chronic inflammation in one of the tendon. And on the side, there was a ligament that was split open. And between the tendon and the ligament, there is a nerve. And I kind of pushed that for so long that the nerve got damaged. Mm. So the only solution would have been a surgery, but I said that the surgery was so invasive that I could have not walked properly again. So that was, it.
At what point did you realize that this was the end, kind of?
You know, I didn't. I gave myself a year. But, you know, on top of that, if I had been more honest to myself, my mental state was a total disaster. Mm. And, you know, I've always been very strong and, you know, I did everything on my own. So I didn't accept that I needed help, you know, so if... Sometimes I feel like if I stopped before because I was sick mentally, maybe I would still be dancing now, but I didn't. So I think, you know, I don't know if it's connected. I don't know if it's my body that then took a decision for me. Mm. But mentally I was very, very, very bad. Mm. So in a way, you know, I understood that even more when I was injured. And... you know, how things developed after I got injured, also with my leaders, I kind of understood I'm never going to dance in the stage again. Mm. And that's because it was so hard for me. Mm. But anyways, you know, that was my job, my identity, my everything. That was the reason why I came to Norway. So I tried for 1 year. And that's also when, you know, while I tried to do rehab and, you know, physical therapies, then cortisone injection and laser therapy, you know, all of that. Mm. I said, if by January I'm not better, then I'm done. And I wasn't better. Yes. So I was done.
But you stayed in Norway.
Yes. Well, you know, 1 month after I moved here, I met my husband. So that was, you know, I never had a boyfriend in my life, basically, because I was only career oriented. I was like, I only gonna dance and boys are just a distraction. So, of course, I had boyfriends, but, you know, it was never a real relationship. But my physiotherapist in Italy, way back, lived here for 2 years, and he told me, you know, there is this guy, he's a very nice guy, he knows lots of people. At that point, I was moving countries all the time, so it was very hard for me. So I contacted this guy, and I said, look, I'm Roberto's friend, I'm moving to Norway, you know, help, where should I live, you know, and Henrik, that's the name of my husband, is very bad on social media. I wrote him on Facebook at that point. And he answered me 2 months after, I think. And I was like, I'm okay. But he used to study in Colorado. And his best friend from Colorado was half Italian. And he was visiting. So one day he called me. I was like, who calls people? But, and then he said, my friend is here. Let's meet. And then we met. And, you know, it wasn't a crazy, oh, my God, he's so, you know, it wasn't a crazy love at first sight, but it was very interesting and very different. And then we met for coffee breaks, and I took him to the opera the first time to watch a ballet that had one man dancing for an hour and a half alone on stage. That was the hardest performance to watch ever. I don't think I really enjoyed that. And then he took me to a French movie with Norwegian subtitles as a payback. You know, but after a while, we said, okay, we like each other. And then we got together ever since.
So when all this with the injury and everything happened, you had like a relationship here and...
Yes, and that was actually, we got married 6 months before. Mm. So that was, for me, a huge... I mean, you know, first of all, when I got injured, I was in a dark room for 2 months, you know, and I wasn't happy here. Mm. I didn't really like Norway the way I should have liked it, because I now understand it's very different. Mm. But I think I danced, and then, you know, it was Henrik's friends, Henrik's family, Henrik's language, you know, everything. And it was nothing mine, like nothing of it was me. Mm. So that was quite hard. I got back to Italy and stayed there for a while. And then was actually when yoga really came in. I must say I practiced yoga. You know, my first yoga class I did when I was 15 in London because my ballet teacher did it. Mm-hmm. I was in Zurich. Lunch break, I would always go to yoga. And that's because something called me, you know, and because I wanted to really change the environment. But then when I was that, I'm like, okay, I need to practice. Something was very clear in my head that was going to be it, that was going to save me. And then I met my teacher, Basha. She was starting a teacher training. And then I'm like, okay, you know, that could be a good thing for me to really dive in the practice, the philosophy, be busy in a way, study. Mm-hmm. So I did. And that's when I was injured. So the 1 year that I did rehab, I was doing my teacher training here in Norway.
But how was it when, I mean, for your ankle? I mean...
You know, it was very controlled. So everything that was controlled, that was fine. And I knew how to save it in a way. So it was more all the jumping, the turnout for ballet, the sliding in the snow that killed me. But in yoga, you know, there were a few positions that annoyed it. But in a way, my ankle was so strong with muscles around it, so I could protect it. Mm. So that was fine. Mm. Yeah.
So then you did... the teacher training. I mean, it's normally, I mean, from my point of view, you know, you would say, oh, you should practice for such long time before you do the teacher training, you know, but for you, you just jumped in and
I'm not saying I knew nothing, but yes, I knew nothing. You know, I practiced yoga because I wanted to before, but I knew nothing about Ashtanga. You know, I just know that I had to do it and to learn. And I just said, I never did a teacher training to start teaching. I did it for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a huge eye-opening because I met so many amazing people. Most of the people, some of the people in that teacher training are still my closest friends. And I learned a lot. And, you know, Basha, my teacher at that time, was the only person that didn't pity me. You know, she was like, okay, that's past life. Now you move on. Now you come and practice every day.
She's tough.
Yeah, she's super tough.
Yeah. You know, she's also one of my old friends. Yeah. And we did the book together, the yoga pregnancy book together in 2010.
Yeah.
Many years ago. And that's exactly what I love about her. Yeah. Because, you know, she's a very sweet person.
Yes.
She's very... when she sees you, she wants to lift you. She wants to, but as you say, she doesn't pity you.
No.
She's like, she can be quite tough. You know, she's Polish and she's also very like determined and
But I think at that time, that's exactly what I needed. You know, when I was depressed, because I was, I tried all the psychologists, different people, and it just didn't work. You know, I had panic attacks all the time and, you know, it was awful. It was awful. But then I felt like this person just didn't know anything about me. I kind of told her my story briefly because she was like, okay, what's up with you?
Yeah.
But then, you know, then was like, okay, we're done. You'll move on. And, you know, and then I would go and practice every day. And then I realized what the practice did to me. I must say, this was Ashtanga at that time. And, you know, I think the reason why I felt in love of the practice first is because it actually had the hardness in a way at that point for me, the discipline that maybe the ballet regime has. So, you know, but yeah. So I don't know if I practiced right at that point, but it helped. Whatever, you know, whatever I did helped. And I'm forever grateful.
Yeah, and that's so interesting. Can you try to explain in what way it helped? I mean, how did the practice affect you? I mean,
you know, like I said, at that point I was in a dark room and I just every day I would practice in the morning. I wouldn't spend the rest of the day crying on the sofa. So even if it was throwing myself out of the house with no energy, because that's how you feel when it's that, I would practice and just feel lighter. I feel like, okay, I can do this. It gave me another strength. And it sounds really cliche, but it did save me. I felt like, okay, it healed me in a way. And I don't think that nothing will ever give me back, you know, all the years, you know, because when I got injured, I'm like, I lost everything, you know, like I lost all my teenager years that I never had. I lost my identity, the fact that I left my country, my family. Nothing will ever give me back then, but it gave me a new chance, I felt. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember how much you told me, but I remember you told me briefly, but still for me that was like I was so amazed, you know, and then also to see the effect that yoga has, which
it's
amazes me in every situation. It's like you just briefly talked about it, but how would you say that yoga and ballet is related? I mean, the discipline and...
Yeah, so if we look at it in one way, you know, you need the flexibility in your body and you need the strength. And especially with Ashtanga, I feel like you need the discipline, right? Mm. It's hard. Mm. You need to show up every day. And that's what I was used to. In another way, you know, it's a completely different thing because in ballet, yeah, of course, you start dancing for yourself. But as a professional ballet dancer, you dance for others. Mm. So everything you do is to impress your public and your director, your ballet masters, because every day it's an audition. Mm. You know, you do a performance that is not well, you will not be casted for the next show. So everything you do has, you know, it needs to be for others. Mm. Yoga, it's the opposite, right? So everything you do for yourself. Mm. And that was for me, you know, when I got into the mat, I was like, oh, this is so good. Mm. And it was also like, you know, very humbling. I'm like, no one cares if my practice is very good or not. You know, so it's like, it was very different. But so it's very similar and the opposite at the same time, I would say.
Mm. You would like look around and see, is someone watching me now? Or
but you know, the more I practice then, the more, especially in the Ashtanga, I think it becomes a bit of that again. But it shouldn't be, right? No. It shouldn't.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Bimby.
It's a lot about the teacher and the room. Yeah. I mean, the shala, because sometimes you can come into a room and, you know, you can just feel the energy is like so competitive.
Yeah.
But especially now with Astrid, my teacher, she's very strict with drishti. Mm. So she can come up, you know, if I have days when I'm not so focused, which happens, she would actually be kind of strict with me. She's like, why do you keep looking around? Keep a drishti, you know, like, and I would go, okay. Mm. And, you know, that kind of helps the energy. And, you know, if she's kind of picky with everyone, because I think it's so important that yoga doesn't become, I mean, it's fun to, how do you say, and we're going to get into that, but to kind of not show off, but, you know, it's nice to also show what you can do. You know, it's a way of not performing, but it's a way of.
Of course, it gives you self-esteem in a way, or self-worth, or yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's nice that you can, like you say, you can get on the mat and you can have a sloppy practice sometimes, because who cares, you know? That's very important for me. But I remember because you did teacher training in Ashtanga, right?
Yes.
And, you know, for a ballerina, the asana practice, you know, the physical part of the practice it comes easier, I would think.
Of course.
But is that just an advantage?
You know, so especially in Ashtanga, right, you need to master a pose before you move to the next.
Mm.
So of course, if you wanted to move very fast, yes, you know, and in a way, in my ballet career, you know, I already went through all the physical challenges. And also, there was a no option for me to give up, you know, because that was actually my job. So if an Ashtanga teacher told me, you need to stay in the room until you master that, I would, because I didn't think I could say no. I remember one day, actually, I was with Mark Roberts in India, and you said, now you're not moving until you land in Karandavasana on your own. And I was there for like over 40 minutes, landing. And I came up with my arms completely bruised. And then the Pika, his wife, said, girl, you're crazy. And I was like, well, he told me to. I was like, well, you shouldn't listen. You know, but I didn't think I could say no. So, of course, physically, you have the understanding of the body and how it works and what you should do in order to eventually master the pose. But for me, to be honest, it almost went a little bit against. Because I moved very quickly into the series, primary series. Yeah, my chaturanga were hell because I had no strength in my upper body from ballet, because you don't use your arms in a way. But that was easy, right? And then started with intermediate. That was harder, but still, like, I did it very fast. And then I was giving advanced, because people saw I could do it and they gave it to me. And to be honest, it was almost a bit overwhelming. And that's because I personally needed a lot more time to process everything. And you probably know that the practice also opens up very many emotions, feelings, you know. And the level of trauma I experienced before, it needed to sink. And, you know, it just came up sometimes too much, too fast. I needed more time. And I didn't take that time.
No, and that's, I mean, it's not really your fault, though. Yeah. I think it's more the teachers, but I can also put myself in a teacher's position, because, you know, when you have, like, let's call it like a talented, you know, in gåsøyne, person that can do all the physical things, you want to move them forward, you know, but from the tradition, you know, they say that you should at least spend like 1, 2, 3, 4 years just doing primary, because, you know, it's such a healing practice.
Exactly.
So, you know, but maybe, you know, you're afraid that the student will get bored, or, you know, oh, they're going to leave because, you know, they have to do the same thing every day. But, you know, they say that it's good to actually spend time.
And I feel
because
that.
Because, you know, it's so many layers. You know, when you start to tap into, you know, it's on the muscle, but then you have the nerve, you know, it's emotional. So it's like you say, it should have time to process everything. And I just remember, because Kaputasana, it's in intermediate series, the second series of Ashtanga. And, you know, I've been doing this practice for 20 years.
Yeah.
On and off, you know, a very regular, but, you know, pregnancies and sometimes too much work, but, you know, very like steady practice. I've had this in my life. But Kaputasana, which is like a very deep, intense backbend.
Everyone's nightmare.
Everyone's nightmare. It's been like, how do you say, it's my worst pose. And also because, you know, I got a herniated disc, so it's almost impossible for me. But I remember at one point when we met and you said you were so frustrated because you have spent 3 months working on Kaputasana.
I'm so sorry. Young and naive, I say that.
I wanted to slap you. Yeah. I was like, what? 3 months? Yeah. You know, which is nothing, because people use not 3 years, but like 7 years.
But having said that, so, you know, I like now, you know, my story is also when you are, you do work with your body only since you're five, you know, it's that there is different. Mm. And like I said, for me, you know, like you spend 10 years of your life to master a pirouette, right, in ballet. So, you know, I should be able to catch my heels easily. You know, so that's for me, that's where I feel like a lot of those challenges I already experienced in another level, you know. So everything else should have been easier. But it was, yoga is completely different. And I feel like, you know, if I... Yeah, I have a very different mentality now than then.
And this is, it's more like a joke, but you know, then no, I was like...
I didn't know better. You know, I wasn't told any of that. Because like I said, I was just happy that I was alive. Like, I mean, I'm saying alive, but anyway, I was smiling. I was out. I was walking, you know. I think for everyone that has experienced depression or panic attacks, to have the energy to actually be, it's everything. And at that point, I was, you know, and I was going again. And so I was, you know, bringing the challenges with, a different.
But it's very interesting or good to hear that you're saying it, that because that's what, at least as a teacher, I try to explain people that it's not only about mastering the asanas, it's also about the journey, you know?
Sure.
And that's what I have thought sometimes, that when you have very flexible people coming to your classes and they can do everything that requires, maybe not the strength, but, you know, that requires the flexibility, you kind of lose a little bit of the journey.
For sure.
To master, you know, there are a lot of things happening, like, for example, Pinchamayurasana, which is an underarm balance, you know. I could never do it. And then I was like, why? What's going on? You know? And then I realized I was too afraid of falling.
Yeah.
And then I started to process and like, why am I afraid of falling? You know? And relating it to my life. Yeah, because I was afraid of failing.
Yeah. And that's the amazing part of yoga, right? Yeah. That really brings you brings you awareness, I think.
Because, you know, it's, then I realized I was afraid of failing in life. And when I understood that, I was like, but if I learn to fall, maybe that will also give me a strength to be able to fail in life, you know? So that, and I think I spent like 3-4 years just understanding. And I was so scared. And the first time I fell over, I was crying like a baby. I was like, because, you know, it opened up. And so that's the interesting part. And I think... being so flexible coming into yoga can be a little bit disadvantaged.
Yes. Yeah. It's yes.
Or both.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
I agree.
But when did you realize that you wanted to be a yoga teacher then?
You know, I did the teacher training for myself. After the 200 hours, I got offered a 300 hours. And part of that was to teach. You know, I think when something becomes so important in your life and it creates, like, the meaning of it, it's so big and has helped you so much. So the cause of it is so good. Then at some point you just want to share it. So then that's how it happened, really. I got offered the job. I got offered to teach. And I'm like, okay, let's try this. So that's how it happened. I never, you know, while I think in ballet, I've always had such a straight ambition and, you know, a plan for everything. In yoga, it was the complete opposite. I'm like, okay, let's just go with the flow and see. So I feel extremely lucky and humble about everything that's happened in these years.
But you chose to go from Ashtanga to Vinyasa.
You know, so it happened when I got pregnant with my daughter. If I practiced Ashtanga, I puked. So my body would scream. But if I moved in another way, that was fine. Like I could do the same poses, but not in the sequence. Also at that point, my Ashtanga practice before I got pregnant was kind of insane. So I think it was my body again, maybe screaming for me without me realizing. So yes, so I started moving in a different way. It felt very good. When Nina, my daughter, was born, you know, I had no time to spend 2 hours and 1.5 hours on the mat. There was no chance. So if I got 20 minutes when she napped, I was lucky. So in those 20 minutes, I had to do exactly what I felt like I needed, you know, like whether it was breathing, chest opening, hip open, you know, whatever I needed. I needed those 20, like I did it in these 20 minutes. And, you know, I have a little bit of a good girl syndrome. So I feel like I always should do exactly what the book says or... So my practice wasn't Ashtanga anymore, and I felt like I couldn't teach Ashtanga anymore. So then I said that to my studio. I said, you know, I need to move on for now and see if he comes back. So that's when the vinyasa came.
And how would you say it's a difference? Do you still, like, today practice, like, more creative?
I think, you know, after, again, my daughter was born, I had a different kind of healing towards maybe the ballet. So I felt like I could move to music again. I could be softer again. So, you know, while in Ashtanga, I felt like my practice was quite rigid and strong and a bit angry, if I can say that. You know, that was my way to just get rid of everything that was tight in me. My vinyasa practices now is the complete opposite. It's very soft, very fluid, and I always do stuff that feels good. And I also realized that by doing that, the deeper position come a lot easier than I've ever experienced before. So yes, I think a bit more dancing, a sequence that I feel like it's actually created to create more space and flexibility. I work a lot on flexibility now. Happy-go-lucky.
But it's so nice. I mean, because it seems like both of it has had its purpose.
Yes.
Because I guess Ashtanga was what you needed at that time.
Exactly.
But then moving on, and you know, if I can relate, you know, I've also had like periods in my life that I was like, oh, Ashtanga is too hard. It's too much, you know, having the babies. Yeah. Oh, I don't have time. I don't have the energy. But very rigid, you know. No, but I need to. And, you know. Yeah. I kind of stuck to it, and then I sometimes would go to a Jiva Mukti class and I would feel that I cheated, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I was like, what am I doing here, you know? And then as soon as I got the energy back, I would come back and... But it's a different story, but I'm really fond of hearing that you can also change.
Yes.
That you know, nothing is forever.
No, and you know, I think... What I miss the most, like the energy of a Mysore room, so an Ashtanga self-practice room, it's, you can't compare it to anything else. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. And I miss that every day. But the way my body and my mind in a way feels now has never felt better.
No.
So, you know, if I had to compare the physical practice, I know that this at least right now works for me. If I had to compare, you know, the feeling... You know, now I always practice on my own, and I really miss that community feeling.
Yeah.
Which is magic, really.
Yeah. But, you know, you can always come back to it.
Exactly.
But what I see now, though, when I follow you is, would you say that vinyasa is more, can you compare it more to the ballet?
Yeah,
to the
for more, sure. For like, my vinyasa, yes.
Yeah.
And I feel it's much more me. So I feel like I really, I had to dig, you know, but I found myself again. Mm. And I'm really happy where I am right now.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you can tell.
Thank you.
By your smiling
face. I'm like, cocky, baby.
But yeah. Do you feel that yoga, I mean, you have actually talked about it, but do you feel that yoga has changed you in a lot of ways or some ways?
For sure. I mean, well, first of all, it taught me to breathe, you know, and I sometimes felt like if I had this practice, even when I was dancing, I think I could have dealt with situation in a very different way. Mm. So, yes, also to, you know, the way you approach difficult situations, I think I'm much more relaxed now than before. And, you know, that it's, again, fine that things change. That never will always, like, nothing will always be the same. Mm-hmm. And that's just to accept that. I think before I would freak out, to be honest. And it made me a bit more patient, maybe. You know, I also know that I have a place that where I can go when things become too much. I can just go on my mat and sit and breathe. And that always helps. Mm.
So it has learned or taught you a lot.
A lot. Hmm. A lot. And it still does.
But you told in the beginning, now you have two kids.
Yes, I do.
So you've been through two pregnancies.
Yes.
And we talked about meeting up today. You talked about breastfeeding still. Yes. Your boy is almost two. And, you know, it's draining. And so how would you say your yoga practice has changed?
You know, my yoga practice now, it literally supports my life. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, I felt sometimes with the Ashtanga, I live to practice. It sounds crazy, but I sacrifice a lot to practice. Now it is literally just a support. And I love my daughter, especially she's 4.5 now. In the weekends, if I say, okay, mommy goes and practice, she comes with me, which is sometimes annoying. But also, you know, she puts her mat next to me and I have a disco light in my yoga room, so she turns that on and she practices. You know, she looks at me and she copies me and she asks me, can you help me with that or can you help me with that? And I absolutely love that. Mm. And I think it's, you know, it's such a gift for her to have and for me to be able to share that with her at such an early age. Mm. Yes, but you know, two small kids at this time, it's a lot. It's a lot going on. So practice is just helping
that phase. It's good to have a tool in
for sure.
Period of time, yeah. Or period in life.
Yeah.
But you are a big inspiration. Like I just said, you know, when I discovered you, if I can put it in that way, many years ago, you know, I was like, oh, I want you to be an ambassador for my brand. And, you know, because you're so inspiring and you're so, you know, the way you move, the way, of course, I guess it comes from the ballet, but it's so beautiful, you know.
Thank you.
And, you know, we're both on Instagram and, you know, sharing this passion for yoga. And recently you went from like, I don't remember, but like 15,000 to 115,000.
Yeah,
I suddenly like, what?
It was
You
crazy.
Know, what happened? Did she buy the...
No, I didn't. No, I promise you that.
But what happened?
So if we go back to Instagram, you know, as a dancer, I never shared anything. I was like, I don't need that. And I didn't need that. But, you know, Instagram started as part of the teacher training. And I was like, okay, this is weird. But then, you know, it was a bit of fun. You know, Basha was in these challenges. I'm like, you have to join. I'm like, okay. And, you know, I was taking fun poses in beautiful places. And it became a bit of a journal, right? And then I realized I have some friends on Instagram. I was quite late on the Instagram game. And you kind of build a community there. And of course, then it was nice to share, nice to show, but like I didn't think about anything. Teaching a bit more, then you realize that you had to be on Instagram. So it became a bit more professional. And you know, and about, I think the real followers changed happened during COVID, because when it was lockdown, I decided to do IG live classes for free for my students. If I said, if there's something I can share, is that, right? I can give them a practice. And then, you know, and then I think at that time I was 3,000, 4,000, and it went to 10, 15,000 maybe, because people would share, or she's doing this or she's doing that. And then it stayed still for a while. And, you know, and I'm not going to say that I didn't try, because I worked very hard. I post all the time. And I think as the dangerous thing a bit about social media and our industry is that the amount of followers sometimes makes you not, it doesn't mean that you're a better teacher, but people think that you have many followers, you're a better teacher, right? And it's not at all that, but I felt the pressure, you know, to perform. Then, you know, I was doing, I have an Italian friend in the States that is an Aloe Yoga ambassador, and she asked me to do a challenge. And I was like, okay, challenge, okay, well, let's try, host a challenge. And I think it happened that Aloe Yoga posted one of my flows and it went viral. Like, it had 1.3 million views. And I'm like, whoa, what happens? So something changed there, but not so much with my followers, but something I think just clicked in the algorithm, because then all of my flows, all of my reels went viral. And people, and I mean, I completely lost control, and people would share everything and go back. And I was like, okay, what's going on? And then I did a, then I went from 15,000 to I think 50,000, and I made a 50,000 kind of thank you post. And, you know, and through this process, I actually realized that the more I was myself, the more people could maybe resonate. You know, so of course, I always post something that looks good, right? Or my practice. And again, from my background, I'm a performer. So I'll pick a flow that I think looks good, then I post it. But, you know, before I would change clothes and put on makeup and, you know, I make a deal out of it. And now I'm like, you know what? My practice is in track pants, sometimes in underwear. You know, that's because I have no time to change. So when I have a break, I go up and practice. And then I'm like, I'm just going to do that. And the more I felt like I showed myself, the more people could resonate. So the 50,000 thank you post went real viral on my page. And then I woke up one day, there was 100,000. I was like, what's going on? And now I think it's calmed down again. So now it's, you know, but it's very many followers, which I'm very thankful for. But yeah.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
But does it influence you? I mean, it's very nice to see that being yourself.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what we need in on social media, people showing their real sides. And of course, you know, your flows is like, it's like a performance. For me, I can just go in there and just watch, because, you know, it gives me like, my breath starts slowing down. I'm like,
thank you. Drawn
that's into, so you know, nice. I don't have to buy tickets for the opera. You know, I can just go in there and just watch these beautiful flows. But, you know, it's not for everyone to do. No. I mean, it's not everyone who can do it, but it's so interesting to hear that you realize being yourself has kind of given you, and let's not say success, because, you know, for me, Instagram is still not like, I never compared, like, if you have many followers, you're a better person,
no,
kind
exactly,
of, you know,
absolutely
it's not. More like, but and that people want the real stuff. And you show your kids, you know, you show that Nina is with you in the room practicing with you. You know, people like that. It's real life.
Yes.
It's not like only a handstand on the beach in a bikini, which is like, that's kind of 2012 or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's, so where do you see yourself in 5 years?
You know, if I get to do what I get to do now, I think I'll be super happy. I recently started an online platform, and it was a bit random again. And that's when, you know, having more followers has helped, because you feel like it's a big reach of people. But it's very nice. I get to connect to many people from Italy as well, like, you know, international people. My mom joins my classes. You know, my mom is not a yogi at all. But, you know, yes, to be able to share what I love, that means a lot. I love doing retreats. So I hope I'm going to go back and do those. And maybe I'll convince my husband to have a third baby.
You want more babies?
I want more babies. Well, he's done.
I have three, so
exactly.
I would never.
No, you know, it's there's something. I never thought I would want children. And then when I had Nina, I was like, whoa, this is crazy. And to have a small baby, it's just, for me, I just feel like I melt. But we haven't had two easy babies, so I think my husband is a bit traumatized.
Just give him a couple of years, you know?
Exactly.
You know, I have 10 years between my first and my second, so, you know, it's never too late. Well, I changed husband, though, so, but anyway, you
know. So that doesn't happen.
You don't have to start planning right now.
No. So I think I'm very happy where I am now. And, you know, I don't have crazy goals for the future. I'm just going to go with the flow.
That's amazing.
Yes.
But I always end these conversations with asking your best tip. I mean, your life advice or yoga or maybe you have many.
I mean, I think for if we start with yoga, is to practice. You know, try different styles, find a teacher that resonates with you and practice. It doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 3 hours, practice, because it helps so much. In terms of life or lifestyle, I think, you know, I, especially now that it's so chaotic with kids and things, to have a little self-care hobby or routine. Like, I have a little portable sauna at home and I get into that, or, you know, to do something that makes you feel good, whether it's doing your nails or go to the hairdresser. Find something that makes you happy and use that as a bit of meditation almost. You know, something that makes you feel good. And also to just be yourself.
Yeah.
I think for many years, I tried to fit in. And also, that was actually part of me moving to Norway, almost the hardest part. And also one of the reasons why my Norwegian is not up to standards yet. Because, you know, I tried to fit in so much, and that never worked for me. You know, you kind of delete yourself and realize that you don't become happy or you're not yourself anymore. And that was sad. So now I'm like, okay, this is me. I'm a bit louder, a bit, you know, strange, like some people say, but it's me. And then people will follow you and will choose you if it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And and that's life.
Doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't matter. No. Exactly.
No.
But I think to actually accept who I am, that was a huge turnover for me in my life and made me 1,000 times happier.
Yeah. And you can totally see.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm so happy that I got to see you again, first
Me
of all.
Too.
And thank you so much for sharing. I think it's so inspiring to learn and see how you know how you managed to switch, I mean, your big dream and now living a happy life. It's very inspiring. Thank you
so much. Thank you for having me, Rebecca.
And I will put out your everything. I mean, hopefully people get to practice with you and discover you in person. I think everyone deserves that.
Thank you.
To get some Italian smile and love.
Thank you.
Thank you. På igjen her.